You're listening to the Sagas in SaaS podcast. This episode features audio from a previously aired live video webcast.
Welcome to Sagas in SaaS Season 4, brought to you by Geek Saga Entertainment. I'm Tara, along with fellow hosts Nick, Jonathan, and Nami.
This live webcast will cover Wind, Part 1 of Iron Gold, the fourth installment in Pierce Brown's Red Rising saga, and then it will be split into four podcast episodes, with each covering one of the four POV characters.
Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or YouTube at Sagas in SaaS, or email us at sagasinsaas@gmail.com to continue the conversation. Oh, and by the way, the views expressed by the hosts are those of us as individuals and do not necessarily represent the show as a whole.
Last but not least, don't forget to check out our Patreon. With 10 tiers ranging from $1 a month to $40 a month, it offers tons of ways to support us and receive some great perks in return, including early access to the podcast versions of these episodes, as well as timed patron-only access to these live videos, which will only be available to our patrons for the month after they've finished airing. You can find us at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment. We've met two of our new POV characters, and now it's time to be reintroduced to someone we met only briefly in the first trilogy. None other than Lysander Alun, grandson of former sovereign Octavia Alun. Lysander's tale begins with a dream that turns into a nightmare. And when he wakes, he is thinking of the parents he lost when he was very young. But his thoughts are soon interrupted with the arrival of his current sort of parental, sort of filial figure. And you guys, it's none other than Cassius. Because, oh yeah, remember how Cassius took Lysander with him when he left Luna at the end of Morningstar? Turns out they've been together ever since, traveling around the galaxy on a beat-up but much-beloved ship called the Archimedes, a.k.a. the Archie, along with a somewhat cantankerous blue named Pytha. Currently, they're on the trail of a hauler that sent out a distress signal. And while it could be a pirate ship, they decide to check it out and make sure that there isn't anyone on board who's actually in danger. Unfortunately for them, it turns out that both are kind of true. The hauler isn't technically a pirate ship, but it was attacked by Askamani, who are essentially obsidian pirates of the worst sort and have murdered much of the ship's crew and captured and tortured the rest.
Cassius and Lysander free the first group of crew members that they find and are told there's a gold on board, a gold who paid them to take her to an asteroid on the edge of Rem territory, which is why they're all the way out in the belt in the first place. Just then, Pytha hails them, because there are three more ships approaching and they kind of need to skedaddle. Cassius prepares to lead the remaining crew members to an evacuation point, but Lysander insists on splitting off to find the gold, which he does, imprisoned in a room with the rest of the ship's crew. He cuts down the metal net that she's hanging in and gives her some stems, but before he can move to help the others, she attacks him, steals his razor, and runs off. This means that he now has no way to cut the imprisoned low colors free of their own nets. And on top of that, Cassius is on the comm telling Lysander that he needs to leave like 5 minutes ago. And then Lysander hears some of the obsidians approaching and finally runs, just hating himself for making a choice that ended up preventing him from saving the rest of the people in the room. And like, rightfully so, my dude. Come on. Big ugh. Pytha guides Lysander through the hauler, and along the way he runs into the gold he was trying to rescue, and who has apparently made it her mission to take down every obsidian that she can, presumably as revenge for her own capture and torture, because clearly that's what's important right now.
So Lysander gets his razor back and is able to save the girl, but just barely. Oh, and while they are able to get on the Archie and fly away, the other obsidian ships are hot in pursuit. Soon enough, their engines are hit, and it seems they're actually not going to escape after all. But just before she passes out, the girl tells him that they will find help at the asteroid she was trying to reach. Okay, now technically they could go to the rim, but no ship has crossed into rim space in 10 years. Not to mention the fact that Cassius and Lysander, being who they are, they're some of the last people who should be paying the Rim a visit in the first place. Plus, hey, the asteroid is closer, so Lysander admits that the girl told him they'd find help there. Since they don't have much of a choice, it's off to the asteroid they go, barely outracing the other ships on their trail. Let it be known that there was a name here, and my brain went, no, we're not saying that, so I didn't. Only before they actually reach their destination, they're caught in a warship's tow beam, a warship that clearly hails from the Rim.
With no time to lose, Cassius has Lysander hold him down while he reveals himself to be a faceless man. I mean, it would take you a second to get that.
I was just like, wait a second, what?
In fact, he used a special and incredibly painful mask to basically graft a new face over his own. And even though they surrender to the commandos who storm their ship, they get the crap beat out of them before being dragged before an older gold woman for questioning. Questioning that is interrupted when they find the girl in the Archie's medbay. Also, it sounds as if a storm knight has also arrived. Not any storm knight Lysander or Cassius know, of course, because the one they did was killed a long time ago. Oh, and this storm knight is apparently the brother of the girl they saved. And when he arrives, Lysander is taken aback by his raw, true, and uncalculating force. His name is Diomedes, and the girl is Seraphina. And these names Lysander knows because they aren't just from any Rim family. They are from House Ra, children of the Rim sovereign Romulus Ra. And if Cassius and Lysander had any hope left for, well, anything, it's gone now.
Oopsies.
Right, I'm gonna be real honest with y'all. Lysander's chapters were kind of the ones where I zoned out a bit.
I did. I don't like Lysander's chapters.
Every time I owned it, it was being angsty or being like, but gold should have still ruled. And I was like, shut up, child. Darrow's bad, but gold shouldn't have ruled.
I mean, and that kind of, so we kind of dive right in to Lysander generally being a kind of angsty teenager.
Right, he's away, 20. Cassius is ragging on Lysander for skipping supper because he was reading. After all, when Cassius was Lysander's age, he despoiled half the women on Mars and probably thought it was their honor, Lysander notes. Forgive me, but I find books of passion more illuminating than the carnivals of the flesh.
Cassius is amused and says, one day a woman is going to make a pretty meal of you.
And Lysander hits back with, spoken like a man who barely escaped the lion's jaws. Well, Lysander knows it was petty of him to say, and he feels lesser for having said it. 10 years recycling each other's air will make the best of men devils to one another. After all, that is why blues were raised in sex. And just to be clear, the enunciation there is sex.
Sex.
Not sex. That's awkward.
No, as soon as you said that, I was like, I hope he clarifies.
Yeah.
Oh, God, though. Cassius has a thing for Mustangs. Huh?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, considering Darrow's ability to pine for years, I'm not going to give Cassius any shit about it, especially because he's just been raising a child in space, and clearly that child is angsty as fuck.
Well, I mean, listen, rightfully so. Let's be real. I have issues with Lysander, but at the same time, he did see his beloved aunt and grandmother who had raised him murdered right in front of him. I don't think he's ever been given much context.
I'm pretty sure Lysander's no good, very bad day has transformed into Lysander's no good, very bad 10 years.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Except now he's got his big bro Cassius with him. Just me and my bro hanging out in space. Doing space things with my bro.
Except that Cassius also kind of tries to be a father figure as well as a brother figure. It's a lot of... Right now, though, the important thing is the hauler whose distress signal they're answering. So they're off to explore, even though it might be a trap.
Lots of Lysander thoughts along the way, such as, I'm certain that had I been born in a different time, I would have been an explorer. Since I was a boy, I've had an insatiable itch for things remote and unknown. In the Citadel, I dreamed of sailing the violent light of distant nebulas and charting astral seas. The great philosopher Sagan once preached it was in our nature as a species to explore. Despite the modern chaos, we do live in a new age of innovation. Perhaps some brilliant boy or girl who has yet to take the step will one day make an engine to carry us faster than the speed of light beyond our single star, beyond the stain of man. Would all this chaos be worth that one innovation? I often imagine what humans could do if there were no scarcity. Nothing to fight over. Just an unending expanse to explore and name and fill with life and art. I smile at the pleasant fiction. A man can dream.
First of all, Lysander, you're a boy.
I think the reason I so heavily disassociated from Lysander's chapters is because he reminds me of, like, the weird college boys at NYU.
He reminds me of all weird college boys that think they're super intelligent.
So there's that, and I'm just like...
I do like the random mention of the great philosopher Sagan.
Carl Sagan.
That made me laugh.
How many of you have seen Cosmos, the original, as opposed to the Neil deGrasse Tyson?
No.
Or read Sagan's books?
I know who Sagan is. I know his philosophies and everything. I have never read anything by him. So I remember who he is, but I don't know anything about this dude other than he was an astronomer.
He was essentially Neil deGrasse Tyson before Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Pluses to Lysander, I guess, for the reference, but the rest of this is just like, it's very, this is not the world in which you can do these things. And also, he's not the person who could do those things. If he ever gets discovered, he's fucked. Everybody wants to kill him.
I think my perception of Lysander is very colored by the fact that he did spend 10 years as the child of absolute power. It's kind of shitty of you to have those dreams when you could have, you know, actually talked to your grandma about shit.
I don't think he knew any better when he was a kid. And from my perspective, as a white person who was raised in a home that, I mean, we were very like lower, like almost poor middle class when I was young. And then my parents started their own business. And so we were like upper middle class by the time I was like in middle school. The way you are raised when you're super young, you can't assume that somebody is gonna be able to understand the privilege they have at that age and use it for good. Especially when all they're being taught is in a, you know, majority white school, or in this case, majority gold school, or in Lysander's case, literally pretty much just homeschooled by his grandma.
I think the part that kind of frustrates me is that it doesn't seem like he's learned anything about how the world actually works.
No, yeah, exactly.
And that's the part that frustrates me. I can forgive somebody having an upbringing that biases you to certain points of view. But what I can't forgive is having 10 years to get fully immersed in the other point of view and still not fucking getting it.
Especially as Cassius has clearly tried to do that, right?
Exactly.
Lysander's description of what they've been doing, like, yes, they did some things, like they hunted a bounty on somebody so that they could get the money to buy the Archie. But beyond that, they've been going around answering distress signals from whoever they can and rescuing whoever they can, which seems to be mostly low colors. Cassius isn't going around rescuing golds from Darrow's fleet. He's going around rescuing low colors from piracy and stuff. So Cassius is, like, honestly,
Cassius is doing
the real work.
Goddamn Cassius.
Cassius is out here doing the real job. Fuck. At the end of the first series, I was like, heck yeah, Cassius' redemption arc parallel with Prince Zuko's redemption arc. Prince Zuko from Avatar The Last Airbender. It was a great redemption arc, and it was really, really good. And the fact that you see now that Cassius has been living the last 10 years in self-imposed exile to take care of this child and make sure that he lives, and this stupid-ass kid hasn't figured out a single fucking thing about how the world actually works. And he still retained all of his gold brainwashing, effectively. And it's just really frustrating. Lysander is not going in my pocket. He's not. He doesn't deserve it.
He's still surrounded by essentially another gold. Yes, they're trying to help the needy as they basically keep the world safe from piracy.
He's kind of Robin Hooding it a little bit. That's not the best comparison, but...
But the lessons he's learning are that there are flaws to everything. And he sees society's flaws and his grandmother's flaws, but he's drawing the wrong conclusions from them. And at least as I read it, is if only we ruled properly like we were supposed to, not the way humanity always goes down to the lowest common denominator of...
I think that Lysander, he did not see when he was there, but I think he sees now the issues with the way society was run. And that comes up a little bit later. But one thing I want to make sure that we touch on is that we have a very Bene Gesserit from Dune quote. Listen, Dune was one of those things that I read in high school and I was like, yeah, Dune, it's the best. And then I read it again 15 years later and I was like, eh. But Lysander did have a very Bene Gesserit quote taught to him by Octavia. And it's, I feel the fear and remember my grandmother's words. Do not let fear touch you. Fear is the torrent, the raging river. To fight it is to break and drown. But to stand astride it is to see it, feel it, and use its course for your whims. I am the master of my fear. I let myself sink into the mind's eye. My breathing slows. A cold, distant clarity settles over me. And I want to point out that Pierce Brown capitalizes mind's eye. This is the first time we've ever heard about this mind's eye thing. And this isn't the only time in Lysander's chapters in part one that it comes up. But I wanted to note that in this case, it is capitalized along with the whole, like, basically fear is the mind killer quote, regardless of what any of us on this webcast or anybody listening feels about Dune. This is definitely a Dune reference, but also this is the first time we've heard this mind's eye thing. And I think it's super important. It has to be super important that Lysander is talking about the fact that his grandmother taught this to him.
I would have fully missed that, because let me tell you, capitalized words do not quite convey across audiobook.
100% facts.
Learning this has been rather eye.
And there are also other times that he mentions it. And to be fair, I don't know if they're in part one or just throughout the book, but there are other times in Iron Gold where Lysander mentions the mind's eye where he does not capitalize it. So there's definitely something going on there. But here's the thing, like, literature doesn't die in this world. Darrow went through that whole thing with the implant where he read like everything that ever existed, and he might not have had, I don't know, Lysander's up in his birth reading Song of Ice and Fire, okay?
Lysander read Dune and he fully identified with the main character. Yeah.
Well, he read Dune because he was like, oh God, this is exactly how I was raised. This is who I am. I am hero of ages. Unlike Kavix, who was never thinking he was hero of the ages, but absolutely fucking is. Anyway.
Lysander did not get the nuance that is apparently in Dune.
And then Lysander does a big boo-boo. Going out of his way to save a gold he heard was on board the ship, getting his razor stolen by her, having to leave behind a bunch of imprisoned low colors, which, okay, sure, fine, he feels bad about, but whatever. And barely escaping with the gold girl that he saved in tow. And then he gets her onto the Archie and realizes she's a peerless guard, even though she's around his age. Whoopsie. And he lies to Cassius about it. He's smitten.
I agree with you completely. He's totally already in love with her.
Oh, yeah. No. He has a big crush on the girl that beat him up. Absolutely. But also, idiot.
Classic.
Classic stupid lad.
I will give him the fact that he cut her down from her net, feeling like he could also take his razor and cut free all the other people. Okay. But the fact that he chose the gold first... Says a lot about him.
Yep.
Nothing we didn't already know.
Well, okay. Actually, let me go back a little bit. she had also very clearly been tortured, whereas the rest of the people that were in there, they might have been like beaten or something, but she had had like her hand burned, stripped naked, and she was also the only one hanging in the center of the room. So I don't necessarily disagree that he cut her down first.
I will give him the benefit of the doubt for 5 minutes. But also, can I call it now? I'm pretty sure Lysander is going to lead a rebellion from the Rim to get the gold back in power. I just want to call it out clear that that's going to happen. He's going to open mouth, insert foot, and be like, I'm Lysander! And Cassius is going to be like, fuck.
Yeah, but except the fact that they all hate him probably more than they hate Cassius. Yeah.
But again, I think you're operating on the assumption that the child has logic. And I don't think the child is that wise. Lysander's going to like team up with the Rim. He's going to be like, I'm the real hero because I'm putting golds back into power the way it was supposed to be. But this time we're going to do it right. And
speaking of the Rim, though, what's going on in the Rim there, guys? Because this is not what we would have or should have expected from what happened in Morningstar, right? They destroyed the docks of Ganymede. But the first thing Lysander sees is a brand new, top of the line, better than anything he has ever seen as a gold who was raised on Luna warship.
Just because the docks were destroyed doesn't mean that they can't produce first-class technology. They just can't produce a lot of first-class technology.
The fact that they already have this brand new, way better than anything they've ever seen warship. What else is out there? And also, there's more to it than that. And then Diomedes walks in, and Lysander like immediately crushes on him. This is the new Cassius, right?
Yep.
This dude who is just, I see him, and he is perfect. Beyond honor, like whatever. Like he's just everything. I just,
Lysander wants to think he's nothing like Darrow, but considering how he sees one beautiful boy and immediately has a crush, and that's probably not going to go away for the rest of his life, that's some Darrow behavior there, bud.
As soon as he hears the name Diomedes, Lysander knows that Diomedes is of House Ra. And then they name Serafina, who is the girl that he saved, and he knows she's of House Ra. And it's like, oh, fuck. I just let us into the viper's nest. Cassius is fucked. There shouldn't be any reason why Lysander isn't fucked by ending up here, because he is Octavia's grandson, the Ash Lord's godson, etc.
But like, they don't know that.
Well, they don't know who they are right now. But Lysander and Cassius know who they are, and how long is it before they find out, especially when we immediately see that they're beating the shit out of them. And like that, the gold whose name I can't remember is torturing him. She's like pressing her finger or her thumb into his eye. And then it's like, oh, wait, hold on a second. We found the girl in the ship. The only reason further torture doesn't happen in that moment is because they found Serafina Ara in that ship. And P.S., Serafina Ara is the same little girl that Darrow had a conversation with in Morningstar.
Oh.
Yep, 10 years ago.
And she's 18-ish now.
I actually thought she was a couple years older.
Well, I think Darrow's observation was that she was about 8. I think the point is she's supposed to be about Lysander's age, because also, like, he needs to fall in love with her.
I thought she was a couple years older than Lysander.
Lysander was 10, and I believe it was said that she looked about 8. So I think it would be fair to say that she is Lysander's age, give or take a few.
She's actually younger than we thought. She's 16. I'm looking it up at the Red Rising Wiki. She's 16 now.
I don't know if I believe that. I feel like that's wrong. So Wiki, it's not the most accurate.
Listen, it didn't agree with us, so it's wrong.
I'm super glad that we're ending this now. And as we close out the episode, we just want to give a shout out to our Heroes Tier patron, Tommy of the TKOK Podcast Network. Thank you so much for supporting us. Once again, I'm Tara, along with fellow hosts Nick, Nami, and Jonathan. Do not forget that you can always hit us up at Sagas and Sass on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, or email us at sagasandsass@gmail.com with any comments or thoughts you might have. Thank you for joining us for Sagas and Sass. We'll be back on Wednesday, March 22nd for part two of Iron Gold, but all of our Iron Gold and Dark Age episodes will be split up by POV, so you will have shorter podcast episodes to listen to.
Especially so, the non-Darrow episodes.
Darrow fucked up less, we wouldn't have this problem.
If he had less POV chapters, we also wouldn't have this problem.
Thank you for listening to the Sagas and Sass podcast. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter at Sagas and Sass.